All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton, and we are knee-deep into it now as camp is underway over at One Buccaneer Place. Practices every afternoon, including one later this afternoon as I record this on Friday morning. But thank you for joining me, Bobby Fenton here. The show, again, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where right now and always on any vehicle they have, not just new, but used, pre-owned, whatever they got on the lot, okay, you get a nationwide lifetime warranty on any vehicle, including unlimited years, unlimited miles, 10 years of roadside assistance, and 1 year of complimentary service. You can see all the details and all the inventory at the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Or see Sean Sullivan, my good friend, the general manager at Bill Curry Ford. Tell him or your salesperson about Joe Bucks Fan, about the Free Stretch, about Bobby Fenton, and you will get the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing and the lifetime warranty. They've been serving the community for almost 60 years at their spot just north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. It's just a little bit past Hillsboro there on the east side of the road. Or again, go to the website and check it out first at BillCurryFord.com and start shopping today. And I'll tell you what, they are a mile north of the stadium, which is starting to get the murals put up. For those of you looking for all these little signs of football season, aside from just the obvious that training camp is going on, you know how in the four corners of the stadium every year they put up murals of players or, you know, big posters of certain players. So they're doing that now. If you are in the area and you've been driving by the stadium, I drove by the other day. Actually, it was over heading back from One Buck Place, and they've got, I don't know if all four of them are up yet. They may be by now. I saw on the northeast corner, which is the one at Himes and MLK, they've got Levante David and Devin White. They're doing like two players per corner, like side-by-side pictures. On the southwest corner, I think it's Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and I don't know what else. It'll be interesting to see if you care about this sort of thing. You know, another natural pairing really would be Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh. And I wonder if they put Sue up there, like if that would start a whole new round of McCoy Sue stuff of people go, oh my God. I wonder if McCoy would like post a video about how hurt he was or something like that. But anyway, point is, things are happening all around town. And of course, training camp is the center of it all. If you've been following Joe Bucks Fan, which you should be following Joe Bucks Fan on Twitter, I would imagine, if you're on Twitter. I know a lot of you may not be. But even if you're not on Twitter, here's what you should do. Like, seriously, besides going to the website, JoeBucksFan.com, go to Twitter or just Google, like, Joe Bucks Fan Twitter, and you can see all the stuff on their Twitter page. Because in addition to the articles, which you're probably, again, able to read without being on Twitter, you can go to the website anytime and read those. But he posts, both of Joe's posts, a lot of the videos, just little clips of stuff going on at camp, just to give you a feel. It makes you feel like you're there. Whatever's going on, a lot of other little blurbs of news that maybe aren't necessarily in an article or things like that. So if you're one of the, I don't want to say low-tech people, because there's nothing wrong with not being on Twitter. In fact, you're probably ahead of the crowd. But if you're one of those types that doesn't have that, I'd still go check a look at that Twitter timeline of Joe Bucks Fan. You can follow me, too, if you want to, at Bobby Game Day, or email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. But we are wrapping up. In fact, this is the eighth day of camp. They started last Friday. Today's Friday again. And we are about to enter game week mode, as there will be a preseason game against the Pittsburgh Steelers next week. And in fact, I guess with that game being when it is, it'll be a part of next week's show. It'll depend on when I record it. But until then, it's just still practice, 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 practice. Now, I'll tell you what. Last night, I was really excited. And actually, I was excited all week. And especially after I woke up yesterday morning, I had a little extra bounce in my step because there was a football game last night, the Hall of Fame game. Now, they have often played that on a Sunday. They've done it on Thursday the past few years, I believe. So this is coming up, still the final official weekend of the year without football. After this weekend, folks, think about this. There's going to be football in one form or another coming into your living room every single weekend through February of 2020, through the Super Bowl down in South Florida. And that is awesome. So this is really like your last weekend. And yeah, I know preseason, well, I don't care. It's football. this is the last weekend without any of it. But we did have some last night, and I actually posted about it on Twitter, and I had a bunch of people, oh yeah, all right, here we go. You know, people were excited, of course. It was the Broncos and the Falcons. I had a few others with the always predictable, oh, whatever, preseason's barely even football. I can't believe you're excited about this, Bobby. Get a life. Hey, you know what? I don't have a life, okay? This is what I do now. Like I always tell you guys on this show, I got two kids, I do all the dad stuff, I do all the regular mundane stuff that all of us do if you have families and jobs or whatever. This is my, like last night, might as well have been the Super Bowl because it was the only football game going on. So don't give me this isn't real football. I'll tell you what it had, okay? It had a field with lines painted on it and a midfield logo, painted end zones. It had the teams in uniforms. It had referees. They kept score, okay? It was on TV, and they had a point spread. That's a football game, okay? All those things, that is a real, live, actual football game. Wasn't practice. Wasn't camp. It was a football game. Was it a good football game? Absolutely not. But it's kind of like the Eddie Murphy Raw, if you've seen Eddie Murphy Raw, the bit about, you know, not having anything to eat and how good of a cracker is when you haven't had anything else and how a Ritz cracker is the best thing ever. If you haven't seen Eddie Murphy Raw, that's a whole other thing. But it's like that. So last night, you're damn right I was glued to my TV and I was going back and forth with the Rays game, but I was so fired up. I actually, and this is maybe how pathetic I am, but I always have these little rituals that I like to hold on to throughout my life, no matter what. The beginning of anything special, the beginning of every football season, especially the first Bucs game and the first Gator game, but also the first preseason games for the Bucs, and the first preseason game of any kind, no matter where I am, like I was in my living room last night, sitting on the couch, but I actually stood up, I actually had to stand up for the kickoff before I sat back down, because I wanted to be standing up for the start of football season. So I stood up, and then the Falcons and Broncos played a just dreadful game. It was terrible, like, you know, nothing happened. Until the very end, the final score was, what was it? I don't even remember already, but I think it was 17-14 or something like that. Nobody scored any points, and it was just generally poorly played, which you would expect for the first preseason game, especially when it's a week before all the other preseason games, and these teams have really had to hustle, had to start camp early, and all that stuff. So, fine. I didn't care. And what I did, what I always do, I put like $5 on the game just so I would care. I paid $5 to care, and if I win, even better. I had the Falcons money line, and I'm not going to go through, like, don't worry, like this year on the show, I'm not going to go through all my gambling wins and losses. I know you don't care about that, but just to get the year started off on an appropriate note, of course, the Falcons led throughout the entire game, then had a big fourth down stop to clinch it, and of course, like every NFL game, on that big fourth down stop, there was a pass interference call, so they got to do it over, and then they ended up scoring, but then there was a review, you know, all the usual crap we always complain about happened again in very predictable fashion, and a lot of the flaws that people complained about with the NFL were on display, and you know what? I still loved every minute of it. Just couldn't, I mean, just inject it right into my veins, bitching about calls, you know, review, replay, all that stuff, fine. Bring it, baby. I couldn't get enough. And we did have our first replay review of pass interference last night, which I know probably excites a lot of people, kind of an historic thing. And it happened, what was it, like somewhere, 3:19 to go in the second quarter. So the Falcons had Kurt Benkert in there, I know. And he went downfield down the left sideline for Russell Gage Jr., and the pass was broken up by Lyndon Stevens of the Broncos, but a flag was thrown. So Vic Fangio, who had said before, he's like, oh yeah, I want to be the first one to challenge PI. Like, I'm gonna be that guy. So that was a great spot. Fangio challenged it, and the call, as you might imagine, was still upheld. And if you look at the replay, it probably was pass interference. It wasn't blatant, but actually the replay... See, here's what I like about this. The replay on PI doesn't just let you overturn bad calls. It can really make you feel better about the ones that look like bad calls, but they weren't. Like, in real time, watching that play, I was like, oh God, you know, garbage PI. Guy wasn't going to make the play anyway, whatever. But then they show in slow motion. You could see, like, a guy had a hand on his jersey, grabbing a fistful of jersey, clearly holding him. And it didn't bother me. Like, a lot of times a bad call in a game will bother me the rest of that game. I'll feel like I'm watching something that shouldn't be happening the way it's happening because of some prior injustice. And so when I saw the call get justified, that made me feel good. So I'm hoping we get, you know, not just overturns of bad calls, but confirmations. Because again, PI in the NFL is probably the worst, if not the second worst rule in all of sports, the way they make it a spot foul. So you're doling out like 60-yard penalties on these deep balls on very, very, very flimsy calls. And it's just terrible policy. Like college's rule of 15 yards is much better. You still get your first down. You still get a pretty substantial penalty. But, you know, oh, hey, we threw it into the end zone from midfield. Like we just launched some bomb. And just take it at the 1 yard line. He kind of grazed you a little bit while the ball was in the air. So just take the ball at the one. Free touchdown. You know, it's terrible. So anyway, with that rule being in place, I want to make damn sure these calls are right. So I'm all for this PI review thing. It happened one time last night, and it ended up being upheld and all that stuff. But it was just good to see. The Bucs will get their turn against the Steelers this coming week. And as far as you know, what's going on leading up to that, it's been, well, today will be the eighth day of camp when they have practice. They're scheduled to practice later on at 6:30. If you're listening to this on Friday, I know people listen to this, you know, several days after recording, but they're scheduled to practice from 6:30 to 9 p.m. both Friday and Saturday, I believe. Now, USF actually was also going to practice this afternoon up at campus up at USF, and they moved theirs to the morning because they're anticipating thunderstorms. They don't have an indoor facility. But for the Bucs this afternoon, I think it'd be a safe bet they're going to be in the indoor facility, although, again, the weather hasn't struck yet. It is expected to, as it does almost all the time. So what have we got so far in the first 7 sessions of training camp? And again, there's all kinds of ways you've probably been following this. Maybe, maybe not. If not, I'm here to help you. The Joes have been covering it up one side and down the other. Ira Kaufman, the Sage. I mean, the whole group, just fantastic stuff. So it's football practice. And I always say that because I think people read way too much into this stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that because you have nothing else to read into right now, and everybody's hungry for any type of information, any type of indicators, anything like that. So it's safe to say that in the first week of camp, the defense has been ahead of the offense, and that is, again, not atypical in any way. Playing offense is a lot harder, quite honestly. Maybe that's not the right way to phrase it. It's more difficult to be sharp on offense right out of the gate than it is on defense. There's a lot more technical stuff. There's a lot more precision. And that doesn't mean there's not technical stuff on defense. And, of course, they're learning a new defense on top of that. So, of course, there is. But I just mean, you know, it doesn't take as much for the defense to get their feet under them and get going as it does the offense. So you see that in a lot of camps where the defense, the first few days, kind of like baseball where the pitching is always ahead of the hitting. Early on, you know, nothing new there. But the defense has, if you're looking for reasons to feel good, if you're looking, and again, we're always trying to overstate what happens in camp, and so-and-so looked good, and oh man, how about the new level of ferocity, and we did the training camp bingo card last week about all the platitudes and cliches you hear about that stuff. But the defense really has done well, and they should be improved. I mean, one, they're going to be improved because they were so bad last year that it would be kind of startling if they were equally as bad this year. It almost seems impossible. And a ton of injuries, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show, all the things they dealt with. But, you know, they're going to be fast. I mean, Carlton Davis has really been doing well at his spot at cornerback. Obviously, Vernon Hargraves, who is still a question mark, really. I mean, we got these rookies who are question marks because they're rookies and they haven't played at this level before. But Vernon Hargraves, I think, is a question mark, too. If you look at him and you look at, you know, obviously his first season didn't go like everybody hoped, but he did get better in year two. And then in year three last year, he was hurt all. He missed, you know, he played a little bit of the first game and he was out. So he's coming back and he kind of fits into that class with the rookies as far as what are we going to get from him. But there's lots of speed out there. SMB, as they're calling him, Sean Murphy Bunting's been running at nickel. Actually ran a little bit at the starting corner spot when Carlton Davis had to go out for a little bit. There's going to be differences. And so far, it has been positive stuff. Now, again, I don't want to go all, you know, people, I'll see it on Twitter all the time. Oh, so-and-so, he's going to be a force now. Devin White, they're talking about Devin White as if he's going to the Hall of Fame already. I mean, and he looks great. I mean, he looks like he fits right in there. He could be a guy that just gives us a decade plus of just rock solid reliability. You know, I hope all that happens, but 7 days of training camp practice hardly tells us any of that. If you want to look at the things that haven't been so good, as usual, the offensive line is a good place to start. They have had a pretty rough start to camp. And I was listening to the Ira Kaufman podcast with, of course, the Joes, and listening to them talk about this too. And Ira made a great point that I wanted to reiterate on this show. You know, it's 7 days of camp. It's a handful of practices. They haven't even been fully padded for most of them. I mean, it's not, you know, it's hardly anything you can go on. But, you know, if you had an offensive line that's been really good, really reliable for a period of time leading up to this year, even a small period of time, even for a year or two, if they'd been a good offensive line, you probably wouldn't think that much of the poor start they have had to camp. I mean, again, we can do the whole analysis by paralysis thing all day long when it's camp time because there's nothing else. And we'll see how they go in live action against the Steelers, albeit just for a short time this coming week. But he used a phrase that really applies here, benefit of the doubt. The offensive line doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. If you had a good offensive line all these years, you would have the benefit of the doubt with them. You wouldn't care that they had some poor showings in the early part of camp. But given the history of this offensive line, especially its recent history last year, and given that it hasn't changed much, the right guard position is the only one that's going to be changing, you know, they don't get the benefit of the doubt. They're going to have everybody, you know, right on them if they're not playing well early on and everybody wanting to know if it's an indicator of something, this, that, or the other. And I don't know. I mean, I'm never going to pretend to know stuff on this show, and you shouldn't listen to anybody that pretends to know anything right now, honestly, because nobody knows anything. It's been 1 week of camp. But the offensive line has not been doing very well. So keep that in mind, and it's something I'm worried about. I mean, I'll be quite honest with you. I am worried about the offensive line this year. I say it every single show I do, no matter what the topic of that day's show is. I always find a way to get some offensive line talk in. And what do I say every time? Yeah, they had got the same people. Paying them more money. You know, they re-upped with a couple guys. Three guys over $10 million, which they were the only team in the NFL to do that at the time they made these deals, although I think now there might be another team or two that has that. But seriously, 32 teams in the NFL, and you've got one or two or three maybe that have three guys at $10 million plus, and that in and of itself would be fine if it was one of the top lines, but it's hardly been that. So you're banking on a lot of better stuff, and, you know, the Football Outsiders Almanac came out last week. And this is something that, again, if you're an advanced stats person, you already know all about. It's really a valuable resource. It's 500 pages. It covers every NFL team, tons of stuff. So I, you know, wouldn't expect most people to read all of that. But the parts about the Bucs in there, I'm definitely interested in. And just like anything else, you don't have to take it as gospel, but it's just an indicator. So this year, and what they do is they run projections, they use historical analysis, they use numbers, they do all these different things, they run simulations. And again, maybe some of you all just don't care about any of that. Maybe you think it's all bunk. I would encourage you to rethink that position. But either way, I understand a lot of you might feel that way. But for those of you that are like, hey, and these guys, you know, these are smart people. They're not the traditional football people that you might have seen in NFL front offices 10, 15, 20 years ago. You do see them now, for sure. But back, you know, they're not those types from way back, but that's a good thing, I think. So anyway, and Thomas Bassinger broke down a lot of what's in there in a piece for the Tampa Bay Times. If you're wondering, they predict the Bucs. And when I say predict, they're not predicting anything. They're projecting more than predicting. They run 1 million simulations of the season, all 256 games, and then the playoffs, 1 million times. And then they see what comes out. So the Bucs made this or won the Super Bowl in 0.3% of those simulations, which is, I think, the second lowest ahead of only the Dolphins in all the NFL. But, I mean, we don't care about that, right? I mean, that's the Super Bowl. That's obviously what we all want, but that's not what I'm thinking going into 2019. What about the playoffs? Like, what are their odds to make the playoffs according to these projections? It's got their playoff odds at 12.6%. Again, pretty low, and the second lowest in the league ahead of, again, the Dolphins. Has them at 6-10 as a mean, you know, those 1 million seasons they ran. The average win total that came out was 6 wins for the Bucs. Last year it was 7-9, so they're even lower on them than last year. And last year's 7-9 prediction by Football Outsiders was a real-life 5-11 season by the Bucs. But last year it had them predicted to go 7-9, 22.3% chance of making the playoffs, which, as we know, they did not. And they had a 0.8% chance of making the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl, which, of course, they did not. So things are even down this year. And why is that? Well, I mean, the offense is the biggest reason. Their offensive projections are low, and a big part of that is losing what they lost. DeSean Jackson, Adam Humphries, you know, they are going to have an increased role by Chris Godwin, who is actually definitely, if you're looking for stock rising people, everybody's been talking about Godwin, but the numbers people actually are on board with that too. They've got him projected at 75 catches for over 1,000 yards. That'd be awesome if he gets that. And as a true number two receiver now, I mean, he should approach that, barring injuries. Mike Evans is obviously the clear number one, but then you got the tight ends, Brate and O.J. Howard, who are both, Brate's healthy again. Still, they've been diminished. You know, we'll see what Perryman brings to the table. There's always surprises. They've been diminished. Jameis Winston, they project 4,729 yards, 28 TDs, 17 interceptions. I could see both of those numbers. They also project 10 fumbles. That would be a problem. That's a lot of fumbles. And every quarterback's going to fumble a little bit. We obviously know Jameis has had issues with the turnovers, and they don't get into fumbles recovered versus fumbles recovered by the other team. But 10 fumbles is going to be too many. Like, that's way too many. I could see 17 interceptions. I could see 28 touchdowns. I could see all this happening and the Bucs missing the playoffs and being some middling at best and bad at worst team, but Jameis not being terrible enough and maybe cleaning up the interceptions, and we're still asking all these same questions about him when it's time to make the big money deal at the end of this season. Of course, they could franchise him and buy another year doing that. But these are the things I'm thinking about toward the end of the season, and it's not a fun place because I'm, like I always tell you guys, I'm always very optimistic. I'm always looking at, hey, why can something happen, not why can't it happen? And there are certainly things that can happen this year. And the experts are going to predict a million different things every different year. And there's always going to be a few teams that meet those expectations like everybody thought. There'll be some that exceed it, and there'll be some that fail to meet them. So who knows? But if you're looking for reasons to believe, here's another one. I mentioned this a few minutes ago about the defense. There's a stat, and it's not really even a stat, it's just something they can count, called games lost. And that's how many games did you lose to injury. Like if a guy hurts himself in the fourth game and doesn't play anymore the rest of the year, he lost 12 games to injury. Now, Football Outsiders goes even more in depth. They don't just look at games lost as in terms of how many games the guy missed. They look at it in terms of even games where guys played but they were hurt. I'm not sure how they quantify all that, and I'm sure the details are kind of spelled out more in the almanac. But either way, the point of this whole thing is to illustrate just how rough of a year it was for the Bucs defense last year. Yes, they were bad, okay? Nobody's saying they weren't bad. But their games lost last year was 92. That number without context doesn't mean anything to you. It probably sounds high. But when you realize that the NFL average last year was, wait for it, 36.1, and that the all-time record since they've been trying to calculate this stat was the 2014 Oakland Raiders at 77.5 games lost. The Bucs 92 obviously stands out as being abnormally high, and it was. So just that alone, before you even get to the new additions that we hope are good, before you get to Carlton Davis maturing into his second year, before you get to Vernon Hargraves hopefully finding a home now and being injury-free and being able to play in a system that suits him better than past systems have, before you get to Devin White, before you get to any of that stuff, there's just no mathematical way. I mean, just the law of regression to the mean dictates the injury situation can't be as bad as it was last year. They had a lot of people last year playing in NFL games and NFL positions against NFL caliber talent who weren't NFL people, quite honestly. And it showed a lot of times. And so, you know, that could have ripple effects throughout the entire team. Obviously, it meant more points scored. It meant worse field position. It meant more turnovers because we're down and we're pressing. It meant a lot of things. And, hopefully an improved defense. And I think the defense this year, I mean, they're not going to be a top five defense, okay? But could they get up there into that middle third of the league? Sure. I'm not saying they will, but that's definitely possible. And that would be huge. I mean, think about just what a night and day difference that would make just in the unfolding of all the games, the way last year's games unfolded compared to this year. So obviously it's something you hope for. We'll see what happens. If you're wondering what else is in the almanac, again, there is just more than anybody could possibly recount. But the overall, as far as those simulations go, the Saints are the NFC favorites as far as the simulations go. They came out Super Bowl winners in 12.3% of the simulations. The Chargers, the AFC favorite, coming out in 10.5% of them. Don't want to say this means any more than it does, but it's always interesting to me, and I wanted to mention it, especially as it pertained to the Buccaneers. So looking at what else has been going on at camp, if you're into the whole kicking, I don't want to say battle, because when you draft a kicker at any point, much less as high as the Bucs did, wasn't as high as they did before with Aguayo, but Matt Gay was still drafted fairly high, so it's his job to lose. And Cairo Santos has actually been kicking pretty well in camp, but again, kind of takes the drama out of it, because unless Gay does, you know, pulls an Aguayo, as I guess we can start saying, there shouldn't be any doubt he's going to be the guy. But he has kicked well. 6 of 8 the other day, since we're recounting camp kicking stats now. But I looked at, I wasn't there for the one where he did this, but he went 6 of 8. And the only two misses were from 57 and 56 yards. He had made a few from 53, kept going progressively back. And his last two missed from 57 and 56. I can just tell you this. The misses, as well as the makes, all of them, even the ones from 57 yards, were hitting the net behind the goalpost like more than two-thirds of the way up the net, okay? So, like, he didn't miss them because they came up short or something like that, like 60 yards plus, totally not an issue. And this is in the indoor facility where things are pretty favorable to kickers, but it's just something to keep in mind. A good point, though, and it needs to be mentioned over and over, the best kicker, Thomas Bassinger used this quote, I'm stealing it. Best kicker is the one you don't have to use. Touchdowns are what win. We talk too much about this stuff sometimes. But it will come a time when it'd be nice to have a guy that can maybe give you a chance from 60 yards. And certainly, if you've seen Matt Gay kick, I mean, and again, Santos has been making some long ones too, but Gay's kicks, I mean, I always look at where it lands, not just if it goes through or not, but where it lands. And they're hitting the net again, like an extra point hits the net. Like they're still going when they're clearing from 57 yards. So a good sign there if you want to and look at anything that's possibly a positive sign. Bruce Arians, and there's some fun stuff. If you go to the Bucs Twitter feed or the Bucs website or whatever, there's some good stuff with him being mic'd up and everything like that. But there was a little bit about him opening up this week as far as his meeting with the Glazers and his health and things like that, and how he said the Glazers weren't real excited about things when he told them he did not intend to call plays if he was hired, and they were kind of like, well, we're kind of hiring you because we want you to call the plays. But he was able to talk to them and convince them about what he wanted to do. Byron Leftwich is going to be the play caller, and he'll be calling plays for the first time. He did take over as the Cardinals offensive coordinator there toward the end of Mike McCoy's tenure there, but Arians was still calling the plays at that point. So, you know, this goes back to what I talked about with Todd Wright when I had him as my guest on the show. That was about a month ago now, maybe a couple months ago, sometime earlier this year. And the one concern I have about Bruce Arians is not his football acumen, obviously. It's not his passion. But, you know, he is not doing things the same way as he did when he was with Arizona. Or with Indianapolis when he was filling in for Pagano or whatever. I mean, Bruce Arians is older now. He's 66. And Todd Wright said, you know, I never thought about it this way until he said it. But you wonder, hey, he retired. He was good with that. Then he went into broadcasting. He's got a great personality. Seemed like he'd be a great broadcaster just given his personality. Didn't go very well. Like, he wasn't a bad broadcaster, and certainly his football knowledge is all there. But he was a little stiffer, just it didn't, you know, if you heard any of the games or heard any of the stuff he did as a broadcaster, it was pretty underwhelming. I think maybe, or I wonder, I shouldn't say I think, I wonder if maybe He was good and happy, and I'm retiring. I'm older now. I got to worry about things. And thought he'd just go broadcast. And when that didn't go very well, he was like, wow, you know, what am I going to do now? I got to do something now. This is me saying this. And Todd said that I'm not saying this is what's happening. But, you know, then he's like, well, hey, I'll go take another job, kind of a ride off into the sunset job that I can hand off to someone like Lefwich after a couple years or 3 years or whatever. And I'm not even necessarily saying I'd have a problem with that. I mean, you know, at 66, and I've never been 66, but that seems like the age when you kind of stop doing stuff, right? Like, especially if you're well off, and, you know, I know a lot of people have that fire and that hunger, and they're not the retired types. And as long as that's the case, then fine. I just hope that's actually the reason and not, well, I really wanted to be retired, but now I just can't imagine not being retired, and I'm not doing broadcasting like I thought. You know, you just don't want to be getting Uncle Fluffy here. You know, you want the same guy that all that stuff on the resume happened under. And so, does Arian spend more time in his golf cart now? Yeah, he's in the golf cart a lot at practice. Is he a figurehead? No, I don't think he's that. Okay, but it is a little bit of a concern. And I've, you know, listen, Byron Lefwich, again, he could, for all we know, maybe he is in line to be the next head coach of the team one day. Or maybe not. We're going to find out a lot about all these things when games start being played. And calling plays in the games and things like that, you know, he'll get a few reps of that in the preseason. That'll help. But he'll still be new at this all year. It'll be his first year doing it. And it's just another reason why when I look at this season for the Bucks, I always say that the year that's about to happen, the year you've got in front of you, it's the only one you've got. So nobody ever wants to say rebuilding year, adjustment year, not this year, but next year, especially in football. No one ever wants to think like that. Like, everyone's like, hey, we saw the Bears go from terrible to almost in the Super Bowl or whatever. You know, they were missed kick away from being in the divisional round. All these teams, there's always last place teams that turn around every year. There absolutely are in the NFL. No question about that. You know, history is not against a last place team going to the playoffs. In fact, of the eight last place teams, I'll bet you two or three of them do become playoff qualifiers this year. But as much as I hate to say it, and I'm not trying to dampen enthusiasm, I don't see the Bucks as one of those teams right now. A lot of things that are very surprising for me would have to happen to get to that point. You know, and last year, looking back at it, you know, we were foolish to probably think that was ever going to go anywhere. But when the Bucs started out 2-0 and they went to the Superdome and beat a team like the Saints, who, again, should have been a Super Bowl, really were a Super Bowl team. I mean, that horrible call is the only reason they were not. And then the Eagles, who were the defending champions, I mean, those two games, and even the Steelers game, which didn't go great, but that was a Monday night football game against a good team that they could well have won even without playing that well. And you're thinking, hey, why not us, you know? And of course, now it seems foolish to look back on that. Maybe being burned by that, I'm tempering my expectations a little bit more. But, you know, reading that stuff that Arians came out with this week and talked about, and again, I don't have a problem with any of it. I don't want to make it sound like I do. But it's just another little bit of information that makes me think, hey, you know, this is going to be a process here, and Bruce Arians is not going to come in here and just magically turn things around in one season without the roster turnover. And there has been some roster turnover, but, you know, probably not as much as you would need. And we'll find out more as camp goes on and cutdowns start happening and things like that. So we got a lot coming up this week when we get to game week situation. We got Hard Knocks coming up. I just re-upped my HBO for $5, so you know it means a lot to me because I just fired that up for $5, and only specifically because of Hard Knocks, you know, especially now that I don't have to worry about Game of Thrones cluttering everything up. Which I can't stand. I got HBO back, and I may just keep it after Hard Knocks, but needed to have it. I'm excited about that. Of course, with John Gruden and everything, was excited about seeing football last night. It's all happening right now. If you want some other things to get excited about, I mean, if Billy Ray Cyrus doesn't light the fire for you, I don't know what to tell you, but the Bucks, I forgot to mention this last week, they're bringing him in for the Bucks Beach Bash on September 21st. It's going to be at the Trade Winds. It's like a season opening free concert type thing. There's a country band called Parmalee that's going to be with him. But it's Billy Ray Cyrus, dude. And I don't care about Old Town Road or whatever he might have had a hand in. I'm talking about, I think of Billy Ray Cyrus. I think of the mullet. I think of Achy Breaky Heart. I think of all the same stuff most of you guys probably think of. And he is going to be in the pewter and red on stage at the beach coming up in September. That's still a long way off. So email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. But speaking of the email, let's go to the email box, because I got, actually it was a tweet I got last night, and it was in response to the Hall of Fame game. You know how they have the inductions this weekend. They show all the Hall of Famers. They kind of feature them during the game, and they interview them during the games and stuff like that. So Ty Law is one of the guys, and I got that tweet later in the evening from Greg in Tampa, who says, "Bobby, without the rings, does anyone think Ty Law is anywhere near John Lynch or Rondi Barber?" That's from Greg in Tampa. And Ty Law was really good, okay? I mean, there's no question Ty Law was really good. But yeah, the Patriots effect matters. If you traded Ty Law and Rondi Barber with each other, and Rondi Barber did exactly what he did, but he did it on those Patriots teams that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, then Rondi Barber would already be in the Hall of Fame, too. Like, that's just, that's undeniable. And I'm not a big should he or shouldn't he Hall of Fame argument guy. I don't care about this stuff all that much in general. It obviously means more to me when there is a Bucs player involved, especially someone like Rondi Barber, who means a lot to me. And we all have our memories of those defenses. But I mean, you know, what was law? 5? I'm not saying these things matter just because I'm saying them out loud, but these are just measurables. Law had 6 more interceptions than Barber. They're pretty even there. I think it was 53-47. 5-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro. Rondi was a 5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro. They were both named to the, like, all 2000s all-pro team. I think there was 4 guys named to that, or the all-decade team, whatever they call it. And it was Ty Law, Champ Bailey, who was also there last night, by the way, Rondi Barber, and Charles Woodson. So, I mean, that, you know, Rondi Barber belongs in that company, and those are Hall of Fame guys. Like, Rondi Barber should be in as well. I'm not saying he will or won't get in, but yes, Greg, to be honest with you, of course it's a Patriots thing. I mean, or even if he'd been in Tampa and the Bucs had won 3 Super Bowls instead of 1, you know, it's not like nobody else from that Bucs defense has gotten any love either, but Rondi might have the hardest road to hoe, if you will. But yeah, Ty Law and Rondi, I don't think they were that much different, and certainly their credentials aren't that much different either. So we'll keep beating that drum. One other thing I forgot. The fridge schedules. Those were big last year. You guys loved them. I'm doing them again this year. They're not done yet, but if you remember last year, like I always tell you guys, all the little rituals of football season that I love. And one thing that I did when I was a little kid, my grandmother, Celia, my dad's mom, taught me this, and I've done it ever since, and I'll do it until I'm a grandfather myself. She'd always put the schedule on the side of the fridge, and she would cut it out of the newspaper and put it on there, and she'd always write, and she did X's and O's. She'd write X for a win and O for a loss, and then she'd write the score, and it would be up there all football season. And one of the ways I knew it was football season is because they'd print the schedule in the paper. She'd clip it out, and she'd put it on the fridge at her house or her apartment. And I always knew I was home when I saw that. So I've always done it since then. Now, I took it to another level because I like colorful things. I'm very visual. So instead of just cutting it out of the newspaper, I actually typed something up on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I do it on Word on the laptop. And I get the logos of all the teams, and I put it next to it. I do a whole thing. It's really nice. Like, it's a, just, if you want to put an 8.5 by 11 schedule up in your office, and on your fridge, in your garage, on your workshop, wherever the hell you want it. I did it last year. I just said everybody could email me, and I'd send it to them with the file, and you could print it out in color or black and white, although I highly recommend color. So I'm going to talk to the Joes, and I'll do it that way again this year if I have to. But I'm going to talk to the Joes and see if there's a way that maybe we can just post the link on the website and you can just download the file, and anytime you want, you can print out 100 copies, you can print out 1 copy. You know, again, color printer recommended. But I like interacting with you guys, so if you want to just email me and ask me for one, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com, I'll send you one that way. I have not typed them yet, but I anticipate typing them this week or next. My kids start school soon. That will open up a lot of opportunities to type things. So we're doing that again, because that's one of my favorite parts of football season, is seeing those. And I always put the Gators and the Bucks side by side. And I had a few people last year request both. Like, they didn't just want the Bucks, they wanted the Gators too. If I can find time, maybe I'll go ahead and do FSU and USF too, just to make sure everybody, you know, just try and cover as many people as I can, because I enjoy doing them. It's fun. It's kind of like, it's a yearly ritual. That means it's football season. So we'll look at that. One other story I wanted to get to, and this is just kind of the comic relief side of things. But you know how they do these one-day contracts when a guy's going to retire from football and or any other sport. You see this a lot. A guy maybe had gone on to some other teams after playing for one team for a long time, but he comes back to that old team, signs a one-day contract, and retires as a member of blank. Steven Jackson wanted to do that, former Rams running back. And so he signed a contract, like a one-day thing, so that he could retire a Ram after playing for them for all those seasons. And what do you think the NFL did about that? He had to take a drug test because he was a member of the team. He signed a one-day contract, and he had to go and actually pee inside of a jar. It says here, a league spokesman said, as you know, more than most people, he's talking to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. This is where the article was, profootballtalk.com. Drug testing is done by the independent administrator. This is done for all players who have signed a contract and have not had an annual test completed. All players are subject to a once-per-year substance abuse test during a window that opens on April 20th, and that's not made up, 420, and it closes in early August. And by all players, they are not dicking around. They mean all players. So Steven Jackson signed a one-day contract, had to take the drug test, thought that would be interesting to bring up. And I don't know if he passed it or not. I don't know what would have happened if he didn't pass it. But either way, we're going to go ahead and end things for this week. I want to thank the Joes, as always, for giving me this platform and giving me the chance to get on in front of all you guys. It's a pleasure all year long, but especially now that we've got it going again, I'm really excited about this season. I know it didn't sound that way necessarily when I was talking about the Bucks' prospects for the year, but I don't think you know me very well if you don't think I'm excited for all this, no matter what ends up happening. And in any event, we've got real football coming up next week. It'll be the Bucks and the Steelers in preseason action. We'll get to all that then. But in the meantime, like I said, thanks to the Joes. Thanks to you. If you want to get a hold of me, as always, email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. That is the final non-game week edition of the free stretch until the first bye week, because we got game week coming up. So, like I've said the past three or four shows, get all your stuff done. You got one weekend to do it without anything bothering you, and then it's football mode from here on in. All right? Y'all be safe, have a great weekend, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.